I have to say, history was my least favorite subject. I still have these thoughts and cringe with the feeling of being in my middle school history class and having my teacher single me out because I couldn't pay attention. The content did not interest me or hold my attention. And so I was daydreaming or talking or who knows what. And she singled me out. That has all changed through our homeschooling journey. I'm going to share a little bit about that with you today, but I'm also going to share with you how I put together a history block. So let's get started. This is episode 3 of the Beauty of Place homeschooling podcast, putting together a history block. This content drop has proven to be a little more difficult than what I anticipated, and it did not come together like the other ones usually do for me. When I started writing this post, I had pages upon pages of information, and I realized it was going to be far too long and convoluted and not very well put together. So I stepped back and actually did something completely different, which was the drop 2 or 3 drops ago, and am coming back to this one. I am taking a segment of the information that I was going to present earlier, and this segment is how I go through building a history block, and even it is going to have a lot of information. In fact, I originally thought that I would do this as a video, but then when I started looking at the material, I realized that it would have much more audio than images or video content. But there's aspects of it that really do require video to understand, and so I'm going to do a combination of both. And this is the audio portion of that. So going back to my intro and saying that I really didn't care for history as a child, and I really didn't, I felt deeply inadequate. And that is coming from someone who really thrived in the academic world in school. But history was just a subject for me that did not hold my interest and I did not like. And I knew from the beginning that I wanted history for my children to be completely different than that. So I want to tell you a little bit about our journey and how we got to the place that I am now, where I feel like we really love our history units. It's chocked full of information, but that information is relatable and connected, and that we can analyze, process, and internalize that information now. So when we started our history journey, my son and I were reading Story of the World, and I just want to pause here and tell you there is nothing wrong with Story of the World. In fact, I loved the first book. It was engaging, it had a storytelling kind of theme, and it did maintain our interest for a little while. But when we got to, I think it was the third, maybe the beginning of the fourth book, and I asked my son, so tell me what you remember. Like, it was the narration. He was telling back to me what we had just read. And he was like, well, this one king of this one country didn't like something this other king did from another country, and they were at war. And I was like, okay, what kings, what countries? And he was like, I don't know. They're kind of all the same. Oh my gosh, that was an epiphany for me. I was like, this is not what I want history to be for us. Did a little research and found Charlotte Mason's Living History books. If you're not familiar with Charlotte Mason's Living books, that concept, Living books in history in particular are books that come at a subject in a storytelling mode. Like, they're telling a story, it's a narrative, it's engaging, keeps one's interest. In history, it often is historical fiction. The book that comes to mind for me is Nori Ryan's Song. The book is about a young girl named Nori who is living during the Irish potato famine. Through this book, we get an idea of their culture, the geographic area that they're living in, and the activities that they do day to day. We see the challenges not only of her own family, but the challenges that other families are having during this time, and the loss of the potatoes and the implications that that has, and this mass immigration that happens in our own community and other communities coming to the United States to escape the suppression that they are feeling from England and the starvation that they are having from the potato blight. You can see here the contrast from having Nori Ryan's story told in this book as to saying, you know, in, I don't even know what the date was. I know it was during the Industrial Revolution, but during this date, during this time, the Irish experienced a potato blight and there was a mass immigration to the United States. There's a stark difference here between how history was presented through a living book in Nori's story and just stating dates and times and facts of that area. Through Nori's story, we get to see history come to life. We get to see what the day-to-day activity was. We get to see what they wore and what they ate and how they acted. And we get to see the different events and so forth that affected how they felt and why they made the decisions that they did to leave their home to go to somewhere new. Discovering Charlotte Mason's Living History style books was a huge change in our history, and I approached it completely different, incorporating more of these books as we went along. Another big epiphany for me was when my son took his high school world history class. We used the World History Project from OER, and I'll leave a link for that. And I want to spend another post going over all the tools that they have for that history class. But that class really taught me how history can be used to compare, analyze, and draw connections. And this was a new way for me to think about history. It also showed me the end goal for my daughter. Now I knew where I was heading and what I wanted to accomplish out of history. The two of those, Charlotte Mason Living History books and the World History Project from OER, has heavily influenced my history units. You may have guessed from hearing my backstory that we started at the beginning with world history going chronologically. I don't feel like going chronologically is necessarily the best way to do it. Right before we started, I had read The Well-Trained Mind by Susan Bauer, and she talks about starting chronologically with world history, showing the world and then the U.S. and where we fit into the world. And at that time, it really appealed to me. So we started at the beginning with world history, and honestly, it's worked out really well. For one thing, the farther away the history is from the present time, the less controversial and the easier to talk about. The unfortunate part of history is that it has some really dark areas, and the closer that we get to present day history, the more impact those dark pieces of history have on us. So it worked out that starting with ancient history was more age appropriate for the younger ages when we started our history program. I know a lot of my audience is either inspired by or follows a Waldorf pedagogy. So although I take a lot of inspiration and use a lot of Waldorf kind of ideas in my history blocks, the schedule that I teach history is very different than the schedule that is usually taught through a Waldorf philosophy or in Waldorf schools. And I will try to remember to leave a link for you on what the typical schedule of what gets taught in Waldorf schools. Before I get into the different aspects of our history unit and how I put those together, I want to talk a little bit about my personal goals for teaching history And then also how I decide what I'm going to teach, because you cannot teach everything in history. There's so much. So my personal goals, I have three of them. One is to teach the narrative or tell the stories, because that really is what history is. It's a series of stories through time. And you can't really analyze or compare until you know the stories first. The second is to give a feel for what it was really like to live during that time period. And that's why we're really looking for living books, because that helps set the stage and give the feel for what it was like to in those time periods. In addition, we look at clothing, at art, music, geography, and literature. The vast majority of our literature study is done in conjunction with our history. And my last goal is for us to analyze, process, and internalize the information. And that happens through projects that are relevant, compare and contrast activities, things that connect what we're seeing to what we already know, making it real for us, making connections. And now that I have my goals, I have to decide what I'm going to teach. And really, that's a challenging thing to do. I'm doing that for U.S. history now, and it's just really challenging. What I usually end up doing is taking a encyclopedia of history. We have two of them, with DK and with Usborne, and looking at their timeline and picking out highlights of the era. I definitely want to make sure that I hit the high points, the important things. I want to make sure that I get a variety of voices, and I want to make sure that my children's interests are involved as much as they can be. For my daughter, that's anything animals. I'm always looking for how I can connect the animals. In our Explorers unit, there were several books that make that really easy. There was one, Animals, that Christopher Columbus saw, and then another book that was Animals that Marco Polo saw. In our World War II study, we focused on the animals that were used in the war and how they were used, and it was actually quite interesting. It really captivated my attention as well. Okay, the different aspects of a unit for us. So when I am putting together a unit, I am looking for several different things. It's kind of a long list, but I'm going to go through it with you. I'm looking for books, and I'll go through books individually in a few minutes. Projects and handcrafts, map work, discussions, any activities or field trips, timeline work, videos, and then I'm looking for ways to integrate it into other topics, both topics that are happening throughout the year and then also making connections with things that I know we already know or the children's passions. So probably the biggest input are the books. And when I look through the books, I'm looking for several different things. For one, I need a spine, something that's going to go over the whole theme of the area that we're teaching. There's some really good ones out there. The ones that I'm thinking of are the For Kids series, like the Industrial Revolution for Kids. It has great information. It also has several different projects. Some of the projects are like, and then some of the projects are really good. Some of them are analytical and or help bring the information to reality. Like I remember for the Industrial Revolution, one of the projects that we did was on inflation, and we looked at a series of items, everyday household items, things you would wear and buy, and what they were during that time and how much it would cost us today. And that was really insightful. And then another project that they had in that book that we used was where things come from, marketing, understanding like the global trade. So sometimes the books also give information on activities, but that's what we used for the overall spine. This year for U.S. history, there is a little obscure book that I found on somebody's Instagram. It's like U.S. history for middle schoolers that I think we're going to use as the spine. And then, of course, we will also use, I think it's the Smithsonian's U.S. history encyclopedia to go along with that. So you need something that's going to give you a broad view. But you don't want something that's going to take up all the time. Like, it needs to be small enough that it can be read in conjunction with other things. Then we're going to have books that zoom in to give us a little more detail. And those are like our living books, where we have some kind of historical, mostly it's going to be fiction. Occasionally it'll be nonfiction, but a historical fiction book, and then some biographies of the people that lived in that time period, artists, musicians. And then I'm also looking for varied voices. And I really like to have those voices, those books written by people from that group of people, whatever they are. Like last year when we were studying Native Americans, I looked for books written by Native Americans. And I did that because I feel like there is a nuance and understanding of cultures and dynamics from people within those groups that have a better understanding of the situation than an outsider looking in. And that's why I really like to read readers in their own voice. We are also looking for audiobooks, and I'll tell you why. I use loads of audiobooks in homeschooling for several different reasons. One is if you are having your child read to learn, that can be an intense amount of reading for history and sometimes science. And that amount of reading, particularly if your child struggles at all, is going to be exhausting. And they're not going to want to read for pleasure because they have so much reading to do for school. I don't know if you remember that when you were in school. My son and I talk about it because he is at that point in college where during the school year, he's not reading for pleasure because he's having to read so much for school. And I try to eliminate some of that by mixing in a good number of audiobooks. The other thing that audiobooks allow me to do is handcrafts and activities with her when we're listening to a book. This allows for my hands and my eyes to be free to watch her in her handwork and to help her in her handwork while we're listening to audiobooks. So I try to mix in quite a few of the audiobooks into our history. I have a variety of systems that I use for both researching and keeping lists and notes and things that I want to use. Because I've decided to do things chronologically, and I have an idea, at least with history, like what's coming next, I'm always on the lookout for books. And so if I see something on Facebook or someone shares something in the stories on Instagram or a post, or I see something in shopping for something on Amazon, I am putting those things in various lists and making notes for myself for when we get to that place in history. And there's nothing particularly special on Amazon. I do a lot of research on Amazon, but I very rarely buy books from Amazon. I think Barnes & Noble's and Goodreads has the same kind of tools that I use on Amazon, which are things like other suggested readings and the ability to make and keep lists. We also subscribe to Scribd, which is an ebook and audiobook subscription they also do podcasts and magazines and sheet music and so forth. And I intermittently subscribe to Audible. And I say that because I really wait for their awesome deals. And then I'm very disciplined. And when the deal expires, I cancel the subscription until they give me another really awesome deal. I love that we can keep the books even after we cancel the subscription. But I don't really like the price of Audible. There are a couple of books that I know we are going to use that are audiobooks, and I want to use them as audiobooks, and Scribd doesn't have them. So I'm looking at them hoping that Audible will give me a deal pretty quickly, but I may end up buying them because each of the books is cheaper than a subscription anyway. So I will share those systems of how I research, make lists, and various organization skills. And it's not anything special. I'm sure there's probably a better way to do it, but it's just what works for me. So I'm going to share that in a video where you can have a visual of what I'm doing. Okay, I want to back up and go back to projects and handcrafts. And the projects and handcrafts that I'm usually looking for are things that are related to the time period and are going to help us analyze and process the information that we're learning. Last year, we were studying Native America, and we did pine basket weaving, if you can really call it weaving. I get pine basket making. We made some corn husk dolls. We also did some beadwork, and we did some circular weaving, similar to what some of the Southwestern Native American nations did. So on each of those, there's a discussion where we're talking about the project, its relevance to the area. We look at our art, what we're making, and then we go to a website or reference book, and we look at the art of the Native American artists. And there's a thin line here with appropriation. We're definitely not selling any of our work, but I'm always looking for crafts and projects that embody whatever time period that we're studying. So in this colonial and the forming of the nation as we know it, we will be doing things like hand-dipped candle making and maybe some rug making, and I have a few other activities in the back of my head. The idea with all of these projects is that they are relevant to the time period and they are helping us assimilate the information that we're studying. So, for instance, if there was something in one of our living history books that someone was doing, we may try to do that similar project to give an idea and to form and make connections between what we're learning and the project. Another aspect of history that I'm looking for when I put together a block is map work. I feel like map work can really illustrate information in a way that talking about it doesn't really convey. An example of this that really comes to mind for me were two things within our Native American unit. One was a map of the Native territories in the United States throughout history. And to look at a map and see the amount of area decrease to these tiny little reservations is really quite a striking image. Another one that was really striking is the decline of the buffalo. I had no idea that the buffalo had such a wide, varied range. They were over in the eastern Appalachians, a part of the country that I don't even think of being associated with buffalo. And so to see a map where that shrinkage got smaller and smaller really brings forth an impact that just talking about population decline really can't do. I do want to say, because I think with history, it's easy to focus on the negative. And with at least the buffalo, I remember very clearly I went through and looked for success stories and people that are doing things to bring back the buffalo to our prairies. The next aspect I'm looking at is what conversations or discussions are we going to have? And I want to pause here and say that it sounds like I've got this worked out and it comes together in a linear fashion, but that's not how it works at all. It is very scattered for a long time and kind of sits in the back of my brain till I start pulling books and putting things on a spreadsheet, and then it starts to fall in place. But even as I'm pulling the books, deciding on the books, and I start to pre-read when they come in or skim through them, I usually end up having to buy one or two more books to fill in the gaps for things that I can see after pre-reading that were missing. And the same thing happens with our discussion items. A lot of our discussion items come from the tools from the World History Project that my son took from OER in his high school year that are modified or scaffold to be more appropriate for younger ages. I do want to spend a post talking about those tools specifically and going over them, but I'm going to leave that for later. Sometimes when I'm reading a book or pre-reading, I realize that we're going to need to have certain conversations about various other things that I wasn't originally anticipating. And so those also get put into a list on my spreadsheet of things that I want us to discuss or talk about. Or sometimes those are activities like Venn diagrams where we're comparing information, or contextualization activities where we're looking at what else is happening in the world and how is it influencing the time and area that we are currently working on. So those are some of the discussions that I look for. In addition to that, I'm always looking for different field trips. What's in the local area within an hour or two that we can go to that's relevant to whatever we are studying at the time? And then there are timeline work. And I like to do timeline work because I feel like it helps us to integrate what we are learning about and when it's happening and what we already know. So we often bring our past work. We will definitely go through our main lesson books from our past history. And I will leave what history posts that I have in this post for you to take a look at and look at specific events and where they fall in the timeline for the area that we are currently working on so that we have an idea of, oh yeah, you know that X, Y, and Z, like Shakespeare was happening at the same time that, you know, this was happening over here in North America. And then the last two, I'm looking for things that integrate with other topics that we've either studied so that I have that spacing and that review. It's bringing it back up for us to remember, or connections with things that we're going to study or are studying for the year. For instance, last year it worked out so well. We were studying North America and we just happened to be doing earth science. I didn't really plan it that way, but it really worked out well. So one of the aspects of our earth science block was that I found sacred sites and monuments that had stories from Native America. And we use that in our earth science in conjunction with an aerial geography book. So we were able to see the space from above and then also hear the stories from the Native America. So, and we would talk about, okay, this is a tribe from the plains. Lakota was the nation that we studied in the plains area. And so we would make those kind of connections and spend a few minutes talking about the Lakota. So that gives us some spacing and some recall when I collaborate those kind of units in that way. The other thing that happens when we integrate either new topics or things that we've studied, our connections are made. So we have something to connect it to. And we know from neuroscience that we remember the information when we have something to connect it to, which is also why I think it's a great idea to incorporate your children's passions into whatever it is that you're studying. Okay, now I have all these different aspects and they're pretty scattered. How do I go about organizing and putting them together? I use an Excel spreadsheet and I usually have a column. Not everything has a column on its own. Timelines are a given and field trips and movies generally aren't going to be very many, so I often put them over on the right by themselves. But books will have a column, projects and handcrafts will have a column, and then sometimes maps and discussions and activities are together, and sometimes I have those separated depending on how much of each. If I start writing and I have a lot, then they get their own separate column. Now, when I start this and start putting the books that I know I'm going to use and start ordering the books that I know I'm going to use and I start pre-reading, I will be adding to the map work that we're going to do and the discussion that we're going to do, because I'm going to see from reading the material, oh yeah, we need to have the map of the 13 colonies, we need to have look at the Indian territory through the years again. We need to look at the population through the westward expansion and so forth. So once I get started, we're filling in the gaps as we go along or adding to the various projects or maps or discussion work as I'm reading and I'm seeing what else we need to talk about. Once I have that spreadsheet completed, then I go through with the daily spreadsheet, similar to the one that I provided in the planning, where I'm going through my columns are staying the same, books, projects, maps, and discussions, but I'm divvying those projects up per day. And this takes some time and some effort, and even the best effort's gonna get it wrong. Like, you're not going to know what you can get through in a day. But as you go along and you do this longer, you get better at it, better at estimating like how much is enough and how much is too much. And so I will divvy up the reading to the best of my ability in those days, as well as the projects that I think that we can get done in a day and the map work. And usually I only have one of the map work, one physical activity, handwork project, etc., unless it is a handwork that we can do while we're listening to our read alouds or listening to our lesson. If that's the case, we may have an additional project in addition to that. But most of the time, if it is something that is separate from our read aloud, then I don't have an additional one during those days. And I think I may have talked about this somewhere else, but I have also realized that we need space for our narrations and illustrations. And so if we are doing both of those on the same day, particularly narration, then we don't do reading. Like, I needed to make space for her narrations to happen. So when I'm doing my planning and I get to a certain point where I want her to do a narration, or sometimes I do the narrations by week. Like, I know I want her to do a narration a week. Then I'll have that on a particular day, maybe on Wednesdays or maybe on Thursdays, we're doing narrations. But in some way, like for the Native America, it was by nation. So when we finished a nation, we had a day dedicated to doing the narration. It didn't mean that we didn't do map work or projects. We just eliminated the reading. We may perhaps have done some of our particular read aloud, but all the other reading was eliminated for the days that we do narration. I found in our homeschooling, we just needed that time. Now, she is coming up on seventh grade, and so for a younger child, if you're doing oral narrations directly after you're reading something, or just checking in later on, you can probably do both of those in the same day. It changes as children get older. But if they are having to write a narration, I found that it works best if we made time, made space for that, because it does take them some time if they're writing their narration. And it's a little different if you're still doing oral narrations. And there it is, all the different aspects that I'm looking for in a history block, the different systems or organizations that I have for keeping pieces and parts that I'm looking forward to, and how I go about putting the block together as a whole. I hope some of it was useful. I have several blog posts on different history units that I will leave links to in this post. And as always, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to ask. You can ask in the community or send me an email. You can also comment on the blog post. And now I'm on Voxer at beauty_of_play. Until next time, happy homeschooling.